Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
The GM Shuffle is back, and now we know who will be playing in the Super Bowl. And one game was terrific. One game was a dud. We'll get to the NFC Championship game in a second. It wasn't a dud, I guess, if you're a 49ers fan. But as far as the AFC Championship game was concerned, Mike, there's plenty to dive into, and there's no else to start than with Patrick Mahomes. 23 of 35 for 294, three touchdowns, no picks. Yeah, that was great. But that run he had, 27-yard tap dance down the left sideline late in the first half, that gave the Chiefs their first lead. We talked a lot in last week's podcast about control. And you said even when a team is up, they don't necessarily have control of that game. The Titans were up 17-7 at one point, and yet you felt like this team was not in control. It was only a matter of time until the Chiefs woke up. That moment specifically was a great moment. But congrats to the Kansas City Chiefs as we dive into the brilliance of Mahomes. How special was he on Sunday?
You know, all I could think about on Sunday was I'm sitting on the couch watching the game with my son and, you know, Millie and everybody were sitting there, and I'm thinking of Mike Mayock. I'm thinking of Tom Telesco. I'm thinking of John Elway. And I'm thinking, you know Dominic's going to need a diaper change here at halftime, but you guys are probably going to need a diaper change too because you're shitting yourself. You're watching this guy. Now, we know this, AD. We know Ryan Pace could not have tuned in. There's no way, right? Nobody in Chicago, like the ratings for that game in Chicago was zero. Nobody wanted to watch it. There was nobody watching on. It could have been a Twilight Zone episode. Nobody was watching the game in Chicago because they couldn't bear to watch it. But all I could think about was those three guys because – when I worked for Al Davis, he was obsessed, and I don't mean just a little obsession. I mean like obsessed with the AFC West. Everything, when he woke up in the morning, before he had his goddamn Diet Coke and his fruit, he was thinking Broncos, Chargers, Chiefs. And if he were watching Mahomes, all he would be thinking about was, how in the fuck are we going to defend this guy? How are we going to stop him? Because for all of Andy Reid's brilliance, and let's face it, Andy Reid's a brilliant coach, and for all their speed, when the play breaks down and it becomes a second play within the first play, no one has an answer for Mahomes because every blade of grass has to be defended. He can outrun anyone, and he can make throws on the move with pinpoint accuracy. So, like, what do you do? If we're going to go to the Super Bowl, if John Gruden is going to reward Mark Davis with his $100 million on a 10-year deal, he's got to pass through Kansas City. If Telesco's going to get the chart, he's got to pass through Kansas City. If Elway's going to get a Super Bowl, he's got to pass. How are we going to do that? That's all I thought about during the game. That's all I kept thinking about during the game.
Yeah, they mentioned at the end of the game that, you know, Tony Romo was like, this could be the beginning of something special. And it's no question. Patrick Mahomes is only in his third season. Like, they're not going anywhere. And to your point, if you're a divisional team, you're like, all right, we have to contend with this for the next 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. Like, it's not going away anytime soon. And listen, the Chiefs are playing in their first Super Bowl since 1969. We'll talk more about the offense, but I do want to mention, Mike, just defensively what they did against Derrick Henry. 69 yards, one touchdown on 19 carries. I mean, I saw your tweet. You said nobody played better all three phases of the game the last 3 weeks of the season. And Casey's defense demonstrably better as the season wore on. There's no question Mahomes is the headliner, right? He's John Lennon. He's the lead Beatle. But the defense stepped it up, too.
No doubt. And I mean, all they were trying to do when it was 17-7, they're behind again. It really should have been 13-7. I said this on Gil Alexander's show. He was talking to me about why do teams play that soft coverage on third and long. And I said, because most of the time they don't want to engage. Nobody wants to play man to man on third and 20. Because you'll get a stupid holding call. Some player will grab a guy and they'll call it. And you'll end up getting a 5-yard penalty or a pass interference call, and you'll get, you know, they'll convert it. So what happens in the game, naturally, Braylon grabs a hold of somebody, you know, and they tag it. I mean, at some point on those situations, if you're practicing third and long one day, you almost have to tape defensive back's hands. You got to force them to cover without grabbing, you know, because if you don't, then, you know, they're going to grab and you're going to get a penalty. But that game should have been 13-7. At that point, but it ended up being 17-7. But all I kept thinking about was once they break serve in this match, breaking serve means forcing them into a third down where they get off the field. the Chiefs are going to score because they're never going to stop them. I mean, now look, the play of the game was obviously when they overturned the Sammy Watkins catch because that kept that thing going and they kept the ball, the momentum going, and they kept scoring on every single drive. But once they held serve once, then all of a sudden the Chiefs could build that lead, and then what, they go in at halftime, 21-17. The Titans, I really think this, and maybe they didn't run the ball as well as they would have liked, but the Titans scoring 17 points in the first half and playing as well as they could to be down by four had to be demoralizing.
Absolutely, because you felt like that runaway freight train was going to wake up at some point. And once KC puts their pedal to the metal, once they start accelerating, you're not going to be able to slow that down. We saw it a week ago. We saw it on Sunday. Shout out to the Titans, Mike. 2-4 early in the season. They take a risk by benching Mariota, giving Ryan Tannehill a chance. They beat the Pats. They beat the Ravens. And to your point, they did have 17 points in that first half. They fall one game short of the Super Bowl. Where do you assess Mike Vrabel and the Titans? We'll talk a lot about the Chiefs. We're going to be having our podcast this Thursday. And next week, by the way, folks, every single day, Mike and I will be cranking out a GM shuffle. But let's I don't want to pour a little dirt on the Titans, but just give perspective to what they did this year.
Well, I think they're a little bit married to, you know, look, I think Henry's a tremendous player. To me, you've got to be committed to Henry. This has got to be who you are. It's a little bit like Henry's like Lamar Jackson. You're going to have to be committed to who he is. And if you pay him, which I think they probably will, then you're going to have to be committed to what he does. Your team is going to have to be built around him. It's going to have to be built around that. Because we know, as we saw it yesterday, that if they get into a drop-back game, their offensive line really can't pass protect. Now, they got to improve in that area. But I think if they commit themselves to Henry, which I think they should do, because it fits Vrabel's personality. The one thing about this football team that you got to love Vrabel about is that they've adopted his personality. They are tough. They're physical. They're not quite as good as they need to be on defense. They certainly could use more pass rush, but they play hard. They compete. And they're good in all three phases, and they present a challenge to you. If they go to Henry, you got to go all in on Henry. You got to say, look, he's our guy. We're going to feed him the ball. I think he was hurt yesterday. I think he wasn't on the field on a couple downs that was surprising to me. And I don't know if he got shook up and we missed it with the TV coverage. But for me, I never felt like they ever got him into the flow, even though he had a couple 10-yard runs. I felt like there were some times he wasn't on the field that was surprising, and it wasn't just third down. And I think they've got to advance him in the passing game. They've got to try to make him a three-down back because they can't really take him off. And then what they need to do is get another back like him that can pound it to give him some break during the season, because I think that's who they have to become. They just got to say, look, we're Joe Frazier. We're never going to be Muhammad Ali. We're going to be Joe Frazier. We're going to just body punch, body punch, body punch, and wear your ass down. And if they do that, then I think they're off to the right start. And because if they're going to sign Tannehill to some form, whether they franchise him or not, then they have a chance to continue and grow. I was told this just recently, that this summer, all of the coaches on the Tennessee staff wanted to play Tannehill then. You know, I got this from a player, and the player said that it was pretty clear in the locker room that Tannehill was the guy. So now that they know now they don't have to go through the formalities of all the bullshit, they can get on with building their team. And as much as I hate building a team around a running back, I think they have to build this team around Henry, or else where do they go? Because then the offensive line can't pass protect.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about running the ball. I saw your tweet when you said late in the first half. You know the one thing the Chiefs are not seeing at the half? We got to run the ball better. Like, that's not a focus for this Andy Reid offense.
No, Andy wasn't saying, hey, fellas, come on, we're going to get this run game going. No, I mean, he ran the ball just because Mahomes ran the ball. I mean, that's the thing that makes the Chiefs are the Golden State Warriors. I mean, they are, no lead is safe with them, right? They can score at a moment's notice. And because of his ability to make these second plays, you know, so let's go back to what are we going to do? What are we going to do if you're Mayock? What are you going to do if you're Elway? What are you going to do? To me, today you're going to have a meeting, right? The one thing about the conference championship games that are so important in sports, and I think it should apply to every coach that listens to this podcast, there has to be three or four teams you've got to study. Al Davis used to mandate this. Watch every playoff game, write up every playoff game. And then he wanted to review every group of players at the positions. And I think this was an old Sparky. Remember Sparky Anderson, the baseball manager?
I love Sparky Anderson. Great with the Tigers, Reds.
He had in his office, you know, his catcher as it relates to the catcher with the, you know, whether he's with the Tigers or with the Reds. His catcher compared to the – I have the third best catcher. I have the second best second baseman. I have the first best. So he would rank the teams in his division based on that. And that's the same thing Al wanted to do. Al wanted me to give him sheets of the conference and say, okay, our free safety is the best free safety. Our strong – and then he would try to – now – there's some issues in terms of evaluating this correctly, but he would try to kind of figure it out. That's what you have to do with the teams you got to beat. If you know for you to win, you got to go through Kansas City, then you better know everything about their roster and what you can do. And if you're Mayock, Elway, and Telesco, the only thing you can really focus on is to understand who Mahomes is and then deal with that. And the first thing I would say is we better have a big, fast, athletic, not fat, athletic defensive line. We need four power forwards in basketball to rush this guy. We cannot let anybody on the field that can't run 4.8 or better. Because if he gets out of there, just like what we saw with Tennessee, they just couldn't catch him, right? So we'll give up power for length and athleticism. And everybody on defense must be able to run really – our linebackers have to run like safeties. They got to be the fastest players on the field because they got to close it down. Because the only way to deal with this guy is through speed. It ain't through anything else. Because when the play breaks down, we need speed to match speed. And every time you turn a card in, if you're with the Raiders, the Chargers, or the Broncos, you better think, how does this player impact Patrick Mahomes?
To your point, you know, how they're the Warriors of the NFL. Look what happened with Golden State, right? Other teams started to say, okay, can we contend with them? If you're Daryl Morey and the Rockets, okay, how am I going to build up my team, have enough scoring that can balance the Warriors? Okay, do I have a defensive stopper who can mitigate Curry or Clay or Kevin Durant or so on? And similarly in baseball, if you say, okay, well, the Astros are built with great starting pitching. Now the Nationals had great starting pitching to win the World Series. We have to combat that. We've got to get our own pitching. The Yankees spent $300+ million in Gerrit Cole. To your point, whenever someone else sees that wunderkind, that generational player, how are we going to stop them? And you're right, that's what keeps you up at night, because Mahomes ain't going anywhere for a long time.
No, and you can't just let, hey, some scout, hey, I really like this jelly bean defensive tackle from Alcorn State. Yeah, okay, great, I like him too. But, you know, the problem is when he's on the field, he'll stop the run. Kansas City don't give a fuck about the run. They ain't going to run the ball down our throats. In fact, if they try to run the ball down our throats, I would be the happiest person in America, right? I'm worried about stopping Mahomes. I'm worried about getting his ass on the ground. I'm worried about putting pressure on him. How do I do that? And some 330-pound defensive tackle ain't going to help me do that. It's just not going to help me do it. And so I got to figure out in my grading system, in the way we procure talent, it has to be an emphasis. Like, okay, the Raiders draft Farrell in the first round. He runs 5 flat. He never ran a 40. Like, that ain't the guy to chase Mahomes. Like, that ain't the guy to chase Mahomes. You have to have a guy like Vaughn. I mean, now I know it's hard. Now, the 49ers, we'll get to them later, but the 49ers have a team because they have had a bunch of players because they've been picking in the top five for so many years. They do have a defensive lineman that can chase, but we have to build a team that can chase this guy, because if we can't beat him, then we're never going to play. Whereas Belichick's sitting there saying, look, I know to get to the Super Bowl, I'm going to have to deal with Mahomes, but I still got to deal with Buffalo. I still got to deal with the Jets. I can't get to Mahomes until I win my own division. The problem is real for the Raiders. It's real for the Chargers. It's real for the Broncos. And Elway, you know, if you're making $8 million a year or whatever he's making, $10 million, $12 million, you got to be able to answer that problem every single time you turn a card in or you sign a free agent or a scout recommends it. You got to be able to answer that question.
To coaching, Andy Reid goes back to the Super Bowl for the first time since the 04 season when his Eagles lost in New England. That gap is second longest to Dick Vermeil's hiatus, a guy who would just cry at the thought of a particularly good pasta fazool. Vermeil, Eagles in 83, the Rams in 99. Also, Andy Reid joins Bill Belichick, the only coach to beat all 32 NFL teams twice. And going into the game, Mike, they showed that graphic at one point. You know, Andy Reid against the Titans was like 1-8. He was unable to have much success against them. But, I mean, you talk about a guy everybody is rooting for. Who doesn't love Big Red?
Now, everybody, look, he's a tremendous coach. And when I'm talking about Mahomes' ability to make plays, I think what Andy's done a great job of is Andy's a great coach, but he also understands how to build a team. And his greatest strength is understanding the quarterback. He proves the Bill Walsh theory that very few can coach him and even fewer can evaluate him. Andy can evaluate him and he can coach him. He's in a special, special class. And the way he designed his offense with Donovan McNabb, to the way he designed his offense with Alex Smith, to the way he designed his offense with Patrick Mahomes is amazing. It's truly amazing. And the speed that he's put out there to complement this incredible talent that he has at quarterback, that's generational. As much as I love Deshaun Watson, he's not a generational player. Mahomes is a generational player. This guy is a hard guy to figure out because there's no blackboard to figure this out. We're not going to run cover two and figure we can stop him because the play breaks down and all of a sudden we lose. I mean, Dean Pease tried everything yesterday, man, zone, whatever he did. And he had the play initially covered. But the problem is once the play extended, you know, the number one thing he's going to curse himself with is this. He let Mahomes beat him with his feet. If I'm playing Mahomes and I am running the defense, my defensive two defensive ends is taking both those tackles and never running up the field and powering them back. And I'm taking those two guards and pushing them back in the pocket. And I'm going to condense that pocket as small as I can to make Mahomes make every single throw behind the center. Because I know if I let him out of the pocket, my DBs are done. So, and he did. He rushed three, and they engulfed him. And even though they only had three guys in a route, by the time, you know, you try covering Tyreek Hill when he can start running around. And then Tyreek Hill's like the greatest center fielder in baseball. He can get to any ball. So when Mahomes throws it 30 yards away from him, he can close it down. It's just truly hard to defend. And the only way it is speed, athleticism is your only answer.
It's definitely a track meet out there. We'll talk more about how to defend Patrick Mahomes, especially when it comes to the Super Bowl. But coming up next, Mike and I will recap the beating the Niners gave the Packers. It was not a fair fight. To go back to your Smoke and Joe and Ali analogy, they would have thrown in the towel by the third round if they could have. That's coming up next here on the GM Shuffle.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, still ahead, we'll talk about Jason Garrett, the clapper, going to the New York Giants, plus Bengals and Joe Burrow. What's going to happen there?
AD, how's he going to clap with a call sheet in his hand? I mean, I'm perplexed by this. I'm troubled by it, actually.
I was going to say, you know, you and I are Jersey guys, so now we can just go see the clapper. He'll be right here in the Meadowlands, and we can clap along with him and say, Jason, how are you going to do this? How talented are you?
I'm thinking he's going to go with the Romeo Crennel, keep it tied around your waist, tied around your neck, and look at it, you know, that version of it. Because, you know, you can't clap one-handed. So I don't know. This is something to consider. It certainly is.
We'll get to that in a second. But first, a name I didn't think we'd be talking about when it came to the San Francisco 49ers winning. I thought they would win, Mike, because of that ferocious defensive line. And that front made life miserable for Aaron Rodgers. But journeyman Raheem Mostert, 220 yards and 4 touchdowns. Now, the 49ers, they like to use a balanced rushing attack. Tevin Coleman gets hurt early. You see him just, you know, holding that elbow and grimacing in terrible pain. They bring the card out. But Mostert becomes the guy. So Jimmy G, who I don't think is a great quarterback necessarily, but they didn't even need him. He threw only 8 passes. I mean, it was so bizarre. You look at the Chiefs and how explosive Mahomes is, how great Andy Reid is with the passing game. And Mike Shanahan goes the other way. Or excuse me, Kyle Shanahan goes the other way. Because, you know what? Let's just run the ball. Run it down their throats, especially now while we got the muscle.
While we got the muscle. We take them on right now. Right now, while we got the muscle is right. And the thing about Kyle, this is what happens to a lot of coaches. When they have success in a game, they get bored, so they try something else. Kyle never got bored. Like, Kyle never got bored. He kept calling the same shit because Pettine clearly couldn't defend them. I mean, it might have been one of the worst coaching jobs I've ever seen in a conference championship game by the offensive slash head coach and by the defense coordinator. I mean, their teams weren't ready to play. I mean, that's just a fact. You can't dispute this, right? You go out there and you're Matt LaFleur, or as the great Vince Lombardi, the carpenter here from Ocean City, New Jersey, the ultimate Packer fan. And if you ever have any questions about Ted Thompson's draft, please contact him. He knows every one of them to the T. As he calls Matt LaFleur, Matt LaFluck, because, you know, he's like, who is this LaFuck guy? You know, like, who is he? Like, can he coach? And, you know, and I was telling him about what he did at Tennessee and how bad their offense were, and it was just blowing my mind how he got the Packer job based on having one of the worst offenses in football, which was proven. I mean, Arthur Smith came in, obviously, with Tannehill, a different story. But I remember, like, game last year, he was 0 for 10 on third down against the Baltimore Ravens and Don Martindale, and I'm thinking, how could anybody hire this guy? So, all right, so he goes out to San Francisco earlier in the season in week 12, and they go 1 for 15 on third down in the game. Okay, we'll give you a mulligan on that, Matt LaFuck. We'll give you a mulligan, all right? Now you come back, and in the first half of a game that you know the defensive line dominated you in before, you go 0 for 4 on third down in the first half. 0 for 4. So now you're 1 for 19. Now you know what that tells me, AD? He don't know. He don't know how to attack the scheme. Even though he can pretend he's friends with Kyle and he's been in the Salah, he doesn't understand how to attack the scheme. He only understands how to beat the scheme. He doesn't know how to attack it. And beating the scheme and attacking the scheme are two different things. I mean, that was as bad as a performance as I've ever seen. When you play Kyle Shanahan in this outside zone game, what's the number one thing you got to do? Set the edge. No edge. You want to get around the corner? Please feel free. Take 12 yards if you like. You know, set the edge. Right? They couldn't get off the field, and they could never stop the run. I mean, like, that's the number one thing you had to do, is force them to become a passing team. He couldn't do it. I mean, this is the number two seed we're talking about. Green Bay truly was Oklahoma. They got in, the number two seed. They didn't belong. Now, they got it through a tiebreaker, right? But they didn't belong there. I mean, if New Orleans is the number two seed, they play Seattle in the week two game in the divisional round. They beat Seattle by two touchdowns. We would have been treated to a much better game. But instead, we got the Packers and this unbelievable thing. And by the way, for the record, I said this last year. They should have hired Mike Shanahan as the head coach of the Packers.
That, by the way, that would have been amazing if you have Mike coaching versus Kyle. But further to your point with the Packers, you talked about the emperor has no clothes. This was a 13-3 team, which people really didn't want to buy into, right? They're like, eh. You know, they won a bunch of close games, and Aaron Rodgers wasn't the same Aaron Rodgers. The focus in the offense more on Aaron Jones. You weren't sure about their defense. I mean, I still can't believe the fact Garoppolo tied for the second fewest passes thrown in a playoff game. He went 24 minutes of game time between his sixth and seventh passes. He had six completions for 77 yards. By the way, Miami is the other team. They threw six and seven passes on the Super Bowl following the 1973 season.
He did his Bob Greasy impersonation. I mean, let's be honest. He was Bob Greasy out there.
Exactly. Let's go back to your point. Why should they have hired Mike Shanahan specifically?
Well, because I thought they needed somebody to come in and really have a cachet and a powerful resume to deal with Aaron Rodgers. I thought they needed somebody to come in and command the room. Hey, look, Aaron, I've won two Super Bowls. I've coached John Elway. I've coached Steve Young. I've coached great players. Here's what we need to do. Here's how this team needs to be operated. Here's how we're going to operate this football team. Instead, they go way young with a guy that has proven, whether it's been in Tennessee or Green Bay, because let's face it now, we can talk all we want about Green Bay's magical season. Their offense wasn't very good this year. They ran the football, but their offense wasn't very good. It was not very good at all. And their adjustments to the game was a disaster yesterday. They just truly didn't understand. If they would have gone back and watched the Super Bowl of the Patriots playing Seattle and just tried to mirror that game plan, it might have been effective. But they did nothing to help Aaron Rodgers. Like, they can't block him. I mean, I said this on VSiN. I said it on this pod. They can't block him. I mean, somebody on Twitter was like, I lost a lot of respect for Lombardi because Jenkins didn't give up a sack all year. I mean, seriously, Pro Football Focus told you Jenkins didn't give up a sack. Watch the fucking tape. Like, watch him just get his ass turned around and somebody, you know, he went to all rookie. I don't give a shit what he went to, right? I watched him on the tape. He can't block Armstead. He can't block Buckner. He knows he can't block him, whether you think he can or not. He can't. right? So stop with this nonsense. And then I heard somebody come on VSiN and say, well, you know, based on the ESPN tracker, Green Bay is the second best team in holding defensive linemen and giving quarterback the most time. Oh, that's fucking great. Wonderful. I love that stat. That stat. Yeah, they're great when they play Detroit, who can't rush the fucking passer, right? They're great when they play somebody else who can't rush the passer. So use those numbers, right? Use those numbers to support your case. How about the game against San Francisco? Can they keep them out for 2.5 seconds? No, of course they can't. So what good is your fucking stat? What good is your stat? Like, how is that going to help me? It don't help me at all. Like, because they can do it against Detroit or against Tampa Bay or against some other shitty team that can't rush the passer?
Here's the other part of it. Is Aaron Rodgers overrated? And the reason I ask this, Mike, is for years everyone said he's the best quarterback in football. And yet even he admits, hey, I only got the one Super Bowl on my resume. Now Mahomes is a better quarterback. Maybe Lamar Jackson's a better quarterback. Rodgers had two touchdowns yesterday. He also had two interceptions. I agree with you, they didn't have a strong offensive balance overall. Clearly their offensive line got pushed around with the Niners front. But do you think Rodgers is overrated?
You know, everybody blamed McCarthy. I mean, Senator, my client McCarthy needs an apology because they all blame McCarthy for the offensive woes, right? So they hire LaFuck and he comes in and really they got worse, right? Now, you know, according to Vince, the carpenter, he would say, well, Rodgers has no players around him, which I don't disagree with. Look, he doesn't have great skill around him. I mean, Aaron Jones is great. Devontae Adams is good. And all those other guys are kind of just pieces and Jimmy Graham's kind of at the end. But to be honest with you, you can't deny that. I mean, he's got great arm talent. He's got great accuracy. But he's a little bit like we said. He's Jimmy McNulty. I mean, he's not that he's subversive from within, but he's just not a great teammate. And I don't think they got somebody in there that can show him how to win games, to show him what he needs to do. I mean, I think this is where the president of the team, Mark Murphy, who really wants to coach the team, I mean, this is where I think he really made a mistake, is you need somebody that can have stature and clout when you're dealing with a superstar. It would be like trying to coach Michael Jordan and you hire somebody from, you know, who's never played the game before, who's never really won anywhere before. And then when Michael Jordan watches the tape of his team from Tennessee, say, well, why are we hiring this guy? They were, you know, they couldn't even convert a third down. You know, like, how does it all add up? And you could say, well, Lombardi, you're just picking on the poor guy. He won 13 games. Did he win 13 games? I mean, seriously. I mean, I thought Packers and the 8 points were a good bet because I felt like, look, they're the number two seed. I saw them beat Minnesota in Minnesota. I saw them play Seattle tough, right? They played Seattle tough, and San Francisco always has trouble with Seattle. I knew they would lose, but I thought they'd be worth the bet. I didn't think they'd get their asses kicked like that. That was embarrassing. I mean, that told me they're the Oklahoma of the NFL.
Yeah, all offense, no defense, and when push comes to shove in a big game, they disappear. That's the analogy.
No doubt. And they didn't belong. They didn't belong. I mean, they didn't belong as the number two seed. I mean, Sean Payton today is probably miserable. I would probably not go near. If I was an assistant coach of the Saints, I wouldn't go near Sean Payton because he's thinking like, fuck. I mean, we should have been the number two seed. We should have been playing them out there. And I promise you, Fox is pissed off too. Because let me tell you something, I would have gone to the Irishman, I would have gone to the two popes. You know, I was ready to bail on that game as soon as possible.
Yeah, I started getting pulled away to the Screen Actors Guild Awards because the SAGs were on. Speaking of broadcasting, though, can we get Tony Romo healthy? I know he's your boy, but every time he's sick, does he not wash his hands? Does he not eat enough vitamin C? He's blaming his kids for the fact he's always sick.
I don't think he's used to, I mean, I know he's from Wisconsin, but it seems like he's not used to this cold weather. And I thought it was a nice tribute for Buck's dad, Buck's dad that Nance did.
Very classy.
You know, that was sweet.
Very classy. Yeah, Jim Nance pointed out 1969, the last time the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, Jack Buck called it, I believe, for CBS on the radio. And now Joe, of course, is calling the Super Bowl. That was very classy of Jim Nance. You're right.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, and Jim loved Hank Stram. And look, it was awesome. But I will say this about Kyle Shanahan. And this is a fact, and I've said this to an assistant coach that was on the staff. When we hired Mike Pettine in Cleveland in 2014, it was really we wanted to hire Josh McDaniels. He turned the job down. We settled. It basically got to the point where we settled for Mike Pettine, and Mike was a nice guy. But, you know, he was coming off a year in Buffalo where they were like 23rd on defense. But when I interviewed Kyle Shanahan, and I went in the room when Kyle was doing his interview, I walked out of the room, and I told Ray Farmer, who ended up succeeding me 2 weeks later as the general manager. And I told anybody that would listen, we should have hired Kyle Shanahan as the head coach. That interview was that impressive that I was like, that guy should have been the head coach. And Kyle is really, like his dad, an amazing coach. And look, John Lynch is going to get a bunch of praise this week, Executive of the Year. Fox is going to give him all the love and all that. And rightly so, he's got the title. But let me just say this to anybody who pays attention to football. Nothing happens in the 49er facility that Kyle doesn't sign off on. He's got complete authority on everything. He runs the entire organization. And I think Jed York deserves a complete thank you by 49er fans for admitting that he needed to step out of the way and changing the direction of his organization and giving the coach the Bill Walsh type authority. And even though people think John Lynch is the GM, and he may do some things in there, but I can promise you, John Lynch ain't coming in just like I wasn't coming in to tell Bill Belichick what to do, right? Like, I was in the same role. I assist him. I wasn't the main guy. Kyle deserves it. It's great for Kyle. I'm really happy for him because that interview I saw in 2014, it was clear. And you know what's funny, AD? When we hired Kyle, Mike called me on the phone and said, Michael, this will be the best coach. Kyle was, in 2014, he was struggling to get a job because of all the people in Washington that were killing him. And the players were saying he was hard to get along with, yada, 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 yada. And it just shows you that you've got to be real careful who you listen to when it comes to head coaching jobs. I'll leave that with Mark Murphy.
49ers are the third team to make it to the Super Bowl a year after winning four or fewer games. Cincinnati did it in 1988, the Rams in 1999. The Rams are the only team to go from four wins to a championship in 1 year. We'll talk plenty more about the Super Bowl and the GM shuffles ahead, including this Thursday. But coming up next, which bad teams from this season could have the biggest turnaround next year, plus the Clapper resuscitated in the Meadowlands? All right, before we close up shop here on the GM Shuffle, please do give us some love here on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe, rate, and review. Adam Schefter of ESPN saying the Bengals have no intention of trading the number one overall draft pick, no matter the interest they get in it. That's per league sources. That's because they know, Mike, they want Joe Burrow to be the face of the franchise, the LSU quarterback who won the Heisman and led the Bayou Bengals to a national championship.
Right, and really, like all reports, it's you've got to figure out what the non-obvious is in the report. And the non-obvious in that report, or maybe it is the obvious, is Andy Dalton's for sale. Andy Dalton's for sale. Put a for sale sign up by him, and he's for sale. Once they made that statement, they basically told the National Football League Andy Dalton's going to get traded. And that's where they're going to conduct their auction. We're going to go with Joe Burrow. We'll go with Ryan Finley as the cheap backup, and Andy Dalton's available for any team that may entertain him. New England, please call. You know, if you can't get Brady re-signed and you don't think Jarrett Stidham's the guy, you know, please call. Jacksonville, if you're changing coordinators and you hired Jay Gruden, because they're going to interview Jay Gruden, they interviewed Scott Linehan for the offense coordinator, they interviewed Ben McAdoo. If you call, you know, maybe you want Jay Gruden wants to be reunited with Andy Dalton. I mean, that's what they said. They said, hey, Andy Dalton's available. And that's an interesting trade, too, because, see, if somebody that really understands what they're doing and can coach quarterbacks, Andy Dalton can be a really good short-term solution.
Well, that's what I was about to say. What do you think the value is of Andy Dalton? Because I'm with you. Listen, has his value gone down? Of course it has. He's no longer a starting quarterback of the Bengals. But he's one of those guys. Like, listen, Tannehill was left on the scrap heap, and he didn't think what he had left in the tank. Also, the Titans made the move of benching Mariota for him. He's resuscitated. I think I'm with you. I think if Dalton, because nobody's questioning his arm strength. No one's ever really questioned his talent or his smarts. If you put him with a good coach, a good coordinator, get some weapons around him, maybe Andy Dalton can be an effective quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're Carolina and Cam Newton can't play, maybe Andy Dalton can bridge you as you draft somebody and you can get to the next level. What I've always called Andy Dalton is a 20-20 quarterback. He's really good at moving you from 120 to the next. It's when he gets in the red zone, he tries to get a little bit carried away with himself and not know who he is. You know, sometimes you got to show him a picture of himself in the mirror. It's kind of like Bella, my dog, when she starts barking at some big dog that she could never – like, have you looked in the mirror lately? Like, you're not kicking that dog's ass. Like, seriously. Like, that's what you got to do with Andy Dalton, too. Like, you know, Andy, you know, you ain't Patrick Mahomes. You ain't making that throw. Okay, so let's just stop that. So, but I think there's going to be tremendous interest in the guy. They'll get a high draft pick. Will they get a one? No. But I think they'll get an Alex Smith-type trade. I think they'll certainly get value for him because there's so many teams that, you know, look, now Chicago, let's just take a moment and know that Chicago's never going to do this because they're committed to their franchise, their most valuable player. But the reality of it is and the way they've built this coaching staff up for Chicago fans, so they've hired John DeFilippo, they've hired Bill Lazor. Okay, so they're going all in on the whether you want to call it the Chip Kelly offense, even though, you know, they had the guy that followed Chip Kelly at Oregon who they just fired. But you can see they're going all in on trying to run some form of run pass option offense and just basically give up on anything under center with MVP Mitch. But that's a horse of another color. But you put them on Chicago and see what they how they compete, right?
Mm-hmm. It'll be nice because I don't know how much more confidence you can have in a guy like MVP Mitch. But in closing, I want to talk about Jason Garrett. He didn't know Joe Judge very well before he agreed to become the new Giants offensive coordinator, but he said on the Giants in-house podcast, it just felt right to me, felt really comfortable to be around him. I think we have shared values as people and shared values as football coaches and what we want to build with the Giants. The 53-year-old Jason Garrett joins the Giants being fired by Dallas. He was the head coach for 9.5 seasons. He was the backup quarterback for the Giants from 2000 to 2003. And he and Judge are going to try to make a connection here. And obviously the biggest thing is, can Garrett get the most out of Daniel Jones? And Garrett said, we thought a lot of him coming out of college. I liked how he played when we played against him. He was tough. He was a competitive player. He's really excited to get to work with Daniel. The Clapper in the Meadowlands. Your thoughts?
Well, we know Jimmy Hoffa's not there, but and so the Clapper comes in. You know, I think, well, look, we said last week the Clapper needed to, I think he listened. He needed to jump back into the pool and start swimming. We're going to see if he can swim. Now, I don't know how he swims. I don't know if he's a breaststroke or a freestyle or a backstroke. Like, I don't know what his offense is. I really don't. I'm not being an asshole, but I don't know what it is. Like, what is he going to bring to the table? Like, what does he do? He's always had top-level talent. He's always had top-level receivers, and he's got the best back. So is he going to run the Dallas system of offense there, which is a numerical system? You know, 475 and all that. We'll see. I mean, this is going to be an interesting hire for Joe Judge. I think, to me, you know, I mean, when a guy who's been a coach for 10 years and then a guy who's never been a head coach before, you know, and doesn't know anything really about what's going on offensively, I think there is some dynamics that are going to have to get over the hurdle. But I'm sure Garrett will be very respectful and do and toe the line, because I'm sure Garrett's sitting there saying, hey, look, you know, I want to become a head coach again. I got to show my stuff on this New York Giants team.
Yeah, this is his bounce back job. You prove this well, you'll get another chance as a head coach. One other bit of coaching news to pass along. Romeo Crennel not expected to return as a Texas defensive coordinator. His contract is up to him. The guy's 72 years old. He's been a coach in the NFL the past 39 seasons, but the Texans gave up 51 against the Chiefs. They gave up 24 points a game, which was 19th, and 388 yards per game. That was 27th in the NFL. Good run for Romeo Crennel.
God bless Romeo. What a great human being. What a great coach. I'm sure he's not going to be the last coach that Mahomes sends to the unemployment line. I can promise you that. You know, he's not going to be the last one. And if these teams, if these GMs don't sit in their room and start thinking about how we're going to deal with this guy and every move they make, they're going to be like poor Romeo and have to go out to pasture. I hope Romeo enjoys it and he moves on. The one thing I do want to talk about, you tweeted this the other day. I love following you on Twitter. Drea DiMatteo's birthday. How about that?
Oh, yes. I do want to admit, thank you for reminding that. 48th birthday to Drea DiMatteo, forever in our hearts, especially you and me, Adriana Lacerva, one of the great knockout bombshells of all time. And then you followed up with her most immortal quote, which was?
Is it true that you did number two in your pants? I mean, that was, to me, one of the greatest lines of all time. He's like, Christopher's like, what? What is it? Just say it. Did you do number two in your pants? I mean, it's the best. Like, if you're listening to this podcast and you live in Omaha or you live in Australia, like, her portrayal of a North Jersey Italian woman, it's perfect. It's somewhere between, you know, the Brooklyn-esque Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny to a little, you know, it's a little bit of that, but it's a little harder, but it's softer at times. I mean, you know, she did a great job. So I wanted just that scene to me. There's so many of them. I mean, she has some good lines in there, too. How her and him fight all the time. And Chrissy, you gave meth drugs to Tony Soprano's daughter. What do you think's going to happen to you?
Christopher. But you're right. The key is like that big hair on those nails. Like that nail is a North Jersey Italian. And it's a good call. You're right. There's definitely a shades of the Marissa Tomei performance, but it's a little bit different. It's definitely got some different nuance to it. All right. GM Shuffle. It's always a pleasure. We'll be back Thursday. And once again, folks, next week, me and Mike, every single day, okay, 5 episodes next week of the GM Shuffle. We got you covered when it comes to the Super Bowl.